Now, we just talked about how batteries are at around 4,000 megawatts of install capacity. And we talked about how that's going to grow pretty significantly by the end of the year and in the next couple of years. Based on, you know, those two, kind of compare those two quantities, you kind of expect saturation to probably start to really happen this year. And we've kind of been looking at those numbers and monitoring them over the last number of months here. And the proportion of the different ancillary services that are taken up by batteries does continue to grow. With that being said, saturation probably isn't too far away.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back for another installment of Transmission. In today's episode, guest host Wendell Hawtop is speaking to Modo's ERCOT market lead, Brant Vermilion. The conversation takes a look at how storage is participating in the markets in ERCOT, the state of battery build-out, and what the future looks like for batteries in Texas. If you're enjoying the podcast, please hit subscribe so you never miss an episode. Let's jump in.
Hi, I'm Wendell. Welcome to the Transmission Podcast. A very special guest with us all the way from Texas. It's our very own Brant, our market expert for ERCOT. So welcome, Brant.
Thanks, Wendell. Good to be here. Yeah, it's my first time in the UK, actually, this week.
Before we get started, though, I just want to ask you, you were traveling to Scotland last week. So what was your favorite Scottish thing?
Yeah, so we went to the Isle of Skye and hit a couple of distilleries. And, you know, obviously Scotch was pretty great. Seeing all the Highland cows, all the sheep. Always great. Landscape in itself, pretty unreal. I know that's like four things, but it was a good trip. So
yeah. Nice. I mean, I think that ticks a lot of boxes for Scotland. Yeah, I mean, if we crack into it, I think the end of 2023, so operational battery storage capacity in Texas sort of exceeded 4 gigawatts. And sort of very sadly for myself, based in Great Britain, this also means it's kind of overtaken GB operational battery capacity. So I was wondering, how did we get here? Like, how quickly has this happened? It seems like it's kind of come out of nowhere.
Yeah, I mean, it has happened pretty remarkably quickly. If we go back to, say, beginning of 2021, I think we were around a couple hundred megawatts in ERCOT. We've done about 12x growth since then. So now we're sitting around 4,100 megawatts. So yeah, just over 4 gigawatts, like you said. We've gotten a nice little bump here at the beginning of 2024. We were more in the mid threes at the end of the year last year, but yeah, been pretty crazy growth, and that's not really stopping in the near future. I mean, in this coming year, by the end of 2024, I think we'll probably end up doubling once again. So yeah, double capacity last year, probably should at least double this year. I mean, I know some of the more optimistic projections, like if you look at ERCOT's numbers, it's actually probably a little closer to like 10 or 11 gigawatts by the end of the year, which is pretty insane growth, obviously.
Yeah.
And that's talking like 2.5 times growth. So yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So pretty rapid. I mean, to put that in context, I think in the UK, well, in GB, we've taken about 8 years to get to that 4 gigawatt mark, which felt like it was pretty quick. But yeah, so clearly things like accelerating much more quickly. I mean, on that, like, is that kind of expected? Are we kind of where we at Modo thought we were going to be, where the industry thought we were going to be?
Anytime you're talking about build out, you always kind of have to couch it with the fact that there are going to be some buffers either way in terms of projects probably experiencing some delays, and whether that's due to maybe some optimistic completion dates or just like hold up in the actual construction of the project, whether that's from shortage in transformers or actual supply chain delays in general. I mean, tons of different factors obviously that can go into delaying a project. So it's likely that most of the time projections are going to be a little bit more optimistic, whether that's just looking at the overall, like what's in the interconnection queue itself. But at the same time, I mean, that growth is still very real. I mean, we're realizing, I guess, most of the expectation, I guess, is the highest level way to put it. If I had to throw a number at it, maybe like 70, 75% of what we would have expected to see built last year ended up getting built. And most of that should still be coming in the future. It's more just delays rather than cancellation of projects.
Yeah, I mean, if we look at the kind of type of battery project which has gotten to this point, you know, what do they tend to look like? You know, how big are they? What duration are they? And where do they tend to be located?
Yeah, so if we go back to that around 4,000 megawatt number, our actual overall energy capacity is about 5,500 megawatt hours. You know, getting a little bit bigger than 1 hour now. I mean, if you look at that on an individual asset level, the largest denomination of asset is still around that 1 hour mark. I mean, we know that most batteries aren't exactly 1 hour or exactly 2 hours, that type of thing. So it's somewhere in that 1 to 1.5 or just under 1 hour range is most batteries in ERCOT still. That's probably, I'd say, around 70-80% of the installed capacity falls in that range. And if we go to like actual like size of capable, like deliver delivery capability, sorry, most batteries at this point are getting to the point where they're actually above 50 megawatts. Whereas if we go back a couple of years, the most common size for batteries was a lot smaller in ERCOT, which is obviously as you kind of expect. As we kind of scale up the industry, the batteries themselves are getting a little bit bigger, going from a lot of batteries that are around 10-ish megawatts to a lot that are now getting to the point where they're above 50 megawatts in size, if not even above 100.
Yeah, and I think that's a very similar story to what we've got in GB. And I guess that's what really is accelerating the growth of capacity. It's kind of as we start to see some of those mega projects. Like, have we seen any kind of projects like greater than 100 megawatts?
Yeah, there have been some that are greater than 100. I think we've had our first 200 megawatt project, if I can remember correctly. And there are some that have been built that are, you kind of have a unit one and a unit two right next to each other that are both like 150 megawatts in terms of you have two separate units listed. But really, if you were to look at like the entire site and you're together, it'd be over 200 megawatts. You'd be looking at like a 300 megawatt project. And then, to kind of round out that whole triumvirate there, talking about the location element as well, batteries are also pretty well dispersed across the entire state. I mean, you've got a pretty large concentration in West Texas, but obviously West Texas is quite a big area too. And then there's a lot of batteries that are kind of populated around the different demand centers in ERCOT as well. So you have kind of the center of the state has three of the major cities with Dallas in the north, and then Austin and San Antonio kind of clustered close together in the center of the state, and then Houston on the eastern part of the state. So there's kind of batteries scattered around those different points. And then there's also a cluster of batteries down towards the south the state as well. So really they're getting built everywhere to summarize that. But yeah, and that's kind of expected to continue moving forward. There are some larger batteries, again, kind of continuing to be built near those demand centers. And then kind of in West Texas, where you have a lot of industrial demand and a lot of the renewable generation, you're continuing to see pretty significant amount of batteries getting built out there as well.
Yeah. So if we look forwards, I guess like a few years, you mentioned some sort of expectation that we might hit like 7 gigawatts, 8 gigawatts by the end of 2024. You know, over the next few years, is that just expected to kind of continue growing like really aggressively?
Yeah, I mean, it's harder to say the further and further you get out. But I mean, if we look at the actual ERCOT interconnection queue, we've hit a pretty crazy number recently where it's grown from, I want to say, a little bit under 100 gigawatts in the interconnection queue, which obviously already an insane number. And I think that was about this time last year. So that's going back about 12 months. And if we go to today, I think we're at about 140 gigawatts of just batteries in the interconnection queue. So that's pretty quickly becoming the dominant technology type in the interconnection queue in ERCOT. I think solar is at a little bit over 150, but it's been growing a little bit more slowly than batteries entering the queue. So that's probably going to become the number one tech type entering ERCOT in the near future. So obviously wouldn't necessarily expect all those projects to get built, but I mean, in the longer run, I mean, a great proportion of those probably are going to end up coming online somewhere down the line. I mean, it's, you know, we might be looking at 2030 or even later for some of those projects, but yeah, I mean, it's going to be pretty insane, the build out for sure.
And I guess to put that in context, I mean, what does like kind of average like peak demand look like in Texas today?
Yeah, so as of today, our record demand last summer, I think in September of last year, was around just over 85 gigawatts of demand. And then batteries during that same period of time, I think they set a record on that same day in terms of their like actual maximum net output, and that was just over two gigawatts. Not exactly a massive chunk of the demand right there. But then if we go forward into today, just this past weekend, actually on Sunday evening, there was a pretty significant pricing event where actually with not a too crazy significant amount of demand, I think it was around 50 gigawatts peak demand, batteries ended up still having their second highest all-time maximum output of around 2 gigawatts. So if we throw all those numbers into a percentage and kind of go back to last summer versus this summer, it's grown from a little bit over 2%, I want to say, of total demand to now we're up to about 4% of total demand in terms of these kind of scarcity events where batteries are kind of helping fill the gap and they've gotten up to about 4% of peak demand. So we'll see how that plays out in the summer when we get into those larger raw demand numbers. But yeah, pretty interesting growth in pretty short period of time already here.
Yeah, I mean, it's exciting to see kind of how quickly battery storage, I mean, we're saying exactly the same thing in GB, kind of how quickly it starts to like contribute meaningfully to the grid, moving away from, I guess, ancillary services, grid services, which previously dominated, which I think takes us on to my next question, which I guess is, I mean, you know, if we're seeing sort of all of this growth in capacity in battery energy storage, you know, what is underpinning that? Like kind of why are these projects getting built? Is there the value there for these projects?
Yeah, I mean, I think if we just look at the last couple of years, which, I mean, you can say that some of that's driven by some pretty extreme summer temperatures, which, I mean, it's always hot in Texas, but the last couple summers, if you are living in Texas or if you've been there in the past couple summers, you'll know they have been pretty brutal. But that kind of helped drive some of that record demand and some of that record demand growth in the last couple summers as well. But that's contributed to some pretty volatile prices, and those volatile prices have contributed to some pretty high revenues for battery energy storage. If we look at 2023 as a whole, I think the average battery earned around $190,000 or maybe $195,000 per megawatt over the course of 2023, which was a pretty significant growth again from 2022, which I want to say was around $140,000 per megawatt. So both pretty strong numbers, but yeah, I mean, big growth last year. And a lot of that's due to some of that increased volatility. And what's driving the increased volatility is, like I said, obviously some pretty extreme weather conditions, but it's not only that. I mean, we've seen alongside the build out of a lot of this storage, alongside the deployment of the storage resources in the state, we've had a pretty significant build out of solar resources as well, right? So you have growing from, I think, just around 5 gigawatts in maybe 2018, 2019 solar generation to now ERCOT's up to over 20 gigawatts of installed solar capacity. If you look at the end of the day, you have these crazy solar ramps, which drive not just, even if demand is staying pretty constant, but if it's at a pretty high level already, you have these really large ramps in what we call net load, right? Where it's demand minus wind minus solar generation, where you have basically the remainder less those two technology types is the amount of demand that needs to be filled by dispatchable capacity. And when you have a significant increase in that value, you need to have basically dispatchable capacity that can respond quickly and kind of fill in that gap. And obviously, that's a big use case for batteries. I think a lot of people that are listening to this are probably already familiar with that. But in the sense that that's not going away, basically, and it's only going to continue to grow. Those solar ramps, like I said, have only been getting bigger over the last couple of years, and they're only going to be impacting prices and impacting the system more and more frequently, which kind of means that the use case for batteries performing energy arbitrage and kind of helping to, you know, charge up during the middle of the day when we have all that solar, and then discharge as we kind of need to help them fill in that gap of when the solar is going away. And we kind of need to manage that period of time where demand's still kind of high, solar's going away, we got to get through the evening into the overnight period. So with that being said, I mean, that's definitely going to be a consistent factor going forward. Weather continues to be a factor within that as well. So, and that really kind of plays into the magnitude and the frequency in which, like, those significant price events as a result of net load ramps really happen. So that's the part that's a little harder to predict. But I mean, I think there's kind of a baseline expectation that they will continue to happen. And it's just kind of a question of how much and how big are they.
You would, like, fully expect that kind of the level of revenues we're seeing at the moment could well continue for batteries.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess the one thing to kind of go back to with that is if we go all the way back to the beginning of what we were talking about with the ancillary service component thrown into it, the ancillary service market is, like we've talked about before, only so large, right? So you have, I think, around 6 or 7 gigawatts that batteries are typically kind of competing for in the ancillary service markets. And that's across the different reserve services like RRS and ECRS. And the frequency response services like regulation. Now, we just talked about how batteries are at around 4,000 megawatts of install capacity for how much they could discharge at one given time. Now, and we talked about how that's going to grow pretty significantly by the end of the year and in the next couple of years. So based on, you know, those two, kind of compare those two quantities, you kind of expect saturation to probably start to really happen this year. And we've kind of been looking at those numbers and monitoring them over the last number of months here. And the proportion of the different ancillary services that are taken up by batteries does continue to grow. It's kind of a gradual increase as we add more and more to the system. But in a couple of the services, we are getting towards pretty consistent, like 85, 90% uptake on those services that are being provided solely by batteries. So with that being said, saturation probably isn't too far away. And what that theoretically should mean is that a lot of the ancillary service revenue should kind of drop off. It's likely to. It's just like if we compare it to GB experiencing that about a year ago, that did cause some pretty significant changes to the revenue stack for sure. I mean, on some level, we definitely would expect just there's some, I don't know, cratering is probably a strong word, but a decrease in revenues for sure on the ancillary service side. But it is a little bit different to GB in its own way, kind of like we were talking about with the volatility component, where that just doesn't quite exist to the same extent here, right?
So yeah, it's been the thing that's kind of really, I think a few winters ago we had pretty crazy volatility, but sort of the last few years, as that situation's like a hit, it's kind of coincided with volatility really just disappearing from the market, which sounds like you expect the volatility to like remain.
Yeah, like I said, I mean, it's hard to say what the magnitude and the frequency looks like, but I mean, on some level, there should be volatility that remains in the market. And some of that is also just kind of inherent to the market design itself. And you kind of rely on the scarcity to incentivize some of the generation to show up both intraday as well as in the longer term in terms of actually building new generation. So yeah, I mean, in that sense, I think the energy revenue side of things, I think, should remain pretty strong and really should continue to grow as more batteries start to prioritize that as either their main revenue stream because of choice or because they're kind of forced into it because of getting kind of competed out of the market with ancillary services, or just there not really being a reason to go into ancillary services. So yeah, I mean, I think those energy revenues should stay pretty strong. And I mean, ancillary services probably are going to weaken in terms of the revenues you can see from them. But at the same time, I mean, the volatility does show up in the day ahead market as well, right? I mean, maybe not to the same extent that it does in ERCOT's real-time wholesale market. But I mean, if ERCOT is anticipating some level of scarcity condition the following day, you'll see those day ahead market prices kind of rise as well alongside that. So you can see some pretty significant like overall daily spreads in the day ahead market on its own. And given that, I mean, prices in ancillary services should, you know, still see some sort of uptick on a given day that does have an expected scarcity condition. I mean, it might be a little bit suppressed relative to the energy price itself, but I mean, there's still probably going to be revenues to be made there, I guess, yeah, is the point.
And so I guess just to, so yeah, so in spite of the kind of really high price volatility we have, sort of ancillary services are still a pretty core component of battery revenues to date. I mean, so in general, like in 2023, what percentage of revenues would have come from those ancillary markets on average?
Yeah, I think if you look at the entire fleet as a whole, it was around 85% from ancillaries. And then if you split that out into 1 hour and 2 hour assets, if you look at only the 1 hours, I think it might have still been, it's probably around 10%. It might have been even a little bit less. It is kind of interesting if you do look at 2 hour batteries, which have become a little bit more prevalent in the last year or two, that percentage of revenue from energy has really started to tick up pretty significantly. I want to say in 2023 it might have been over 20%, and I think in the early 2024 numbers it's definitely over 20% for those 2 hour assets. So that transition has definitely started to occur, and it'll be interesting to see kind of how that evolves over the course of the year as we get more batteries online, and especially if some of them are also continuing to be 2 hour assets.
I mean, just go back to the point you made, like to put it into the context of the sort of effect of saturation we've seen in the GB market. I actually did the rough exchange rate earlier. So I think $180,000-$190,000 is about £150,000 per megawatt a year here, which is what we had in 2022. And almost into all of that was from frequency response. There was a bit which was driven by wholesale volatility. But then 1 year later, we're at a third of that level. And this year, we're going to be kind of probably lower than that again. So that's the kind of effect of saturation here. But like you said, that's kind of been the kind of the complete drop away in frequency response revenues and the lack of wholesale price volatility. I mean, I think that's kind of interesting to kind of dig into that wholesale volatility point a bit, because, you know, one of the big problems we've had in GB, and I think this is kind of affecting Europe, has been that kind of demand hasn't really been growing. If anything, it's fallen, especially since some of the kind of gas price crisis we've had. And we've just got a lot of capacity online. And so that doesn't lead to good sort of wholesale market volatility at all. But then it sounds like it's a completely different story in ERCOT. Like, demand, is it increasing?
Yeah, I mean, short story is yes, it's increasing quite a bit. I mean, if we look at 2022 to 2023, so I think the peak demand record as of the end of 2022 was something around 80 gigawatts, which I think had been set earlier that summer. And like I was saying earlier, last summer in 2023, we set a new record of about 85.5 gigawatts. So that 5.5 gigawatt growth on its own is pretty substantial. And if we look a little bit more into maybe what the long-term numbers are saying, ERCOT actually just released an update to its long-term demand forecast, which showed some pretty significant revisions. So previously it had been not necessarily flat, but relatively consistent growth with the last number of years, which actually prior to this past year, year was growing at a relatively steady rate of, I want to say like 4 or 5% per year, which is fairly significant for an electricity system, but not anything unheard of. But I think the recent numbers that they published actually had the 2030 peak demand almost double what the current peak demand of all time would be. So we're talking about like in the 150, 160 gigawatt range, which is obviously like insane. But I mean, it's apparently possible. And if you look at actual like interconnection queues of some of the industrial demand that's expected to come online, whether that's data centers or Bitcoin mining or some of the like more legacy industrial like manufacturing or oil and gas, it is pretty stark the amount of build out that we'd expect to see on the demand side. What will be interesting to see though too is some of that demand is going to be both more price responsive, and some of it's also going to be not necessarily like, obviously we're talking about industrial demand rather than residential demand, so it's not necessarily going to follow a typical demand profile. So it'll be interesting to see how that evolves. I mean, if we go from having a largely residential demand grid, or just at least a typical demand profile following type of system, to a system that has a significant amount of its demand coming from this industrial load side type stuff, it's going to be interesting to see like how price responsive the demand side is and how consistent it is when prices aren't super volatile. It'll be interesting to see how the generation side kind of evolves alongside that.
Yeah. I mean, those numbers, like, I think I saw them as well, and it kind of seems bonkers, but
yeah, it's hard to believe.
It sounds like a story that's happening across the US really, in like sharp contrast really to what we've got happening in
Europe. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think Texas might be kind of the outlier to even within the US, but I mean, yeah, I think it is consistent across a lot of the different ISOs. Some of those demand forecasts have been getting adjusted upwards. I want to say I saw some MISO or the Mid-Continent or Midwest numbers getting adjusted up pretty recently as well. And I think like the PJM numbers or Pennsylvania, Jersey, Maryland numbers getting adjusted up pretty significantly as well, from basically being flat to starting to get into that like 4 or 5% demand growth, which again, like is fairly significant for electricity systems. Yeah, I mean, I think the electrification is a lot of the driver of that as well. So you're talking about everybody starting to get EVs, and just in general, like overall electrification of the country really is certainly a contributor to that as well. Yeah.
Yeah. So if by 2030 has got 150 gigawatts of demand, you know, it's kind of come up a lot, obviously, there's no capacity market. Are there the tools to kind of get the generation online, to get the flexibility online, battery storage capacity online that it would need?
Yeah, I mean, if it's 2030, we'll see. I mean, I think that's going to be tough to get to. But at the same time, there's not only just a lot of storage in the queue, there's quite a bit of solar in particular, but also wind generation that should be coming online. So in terms of meeting that baseload requirement, I mean, if you're getting those like 30% capacity factors from solar generation, and I want to say the typical numbers are like 60, 70% for a lot of the state for wind generation, I mean, theoretically, you should be able to meet a lot of the baseload if the build out kind of continues at the pace it is. ERCOT continues to do a really good job with managing the interconnection queue and actually getting projects to the completion stage. Then I think meeting the baseload is actually fairly feasible in the sense that it's just going to be, you know, massive renewable build out. You'll have a ton of batteries there to support it as well. I mean, but that's not necessarily the question, right? I mean, it's really the periods of times where the scarcity plays into things. But I mean, that kind of goes back to what I was saying about if you have a lot of price responsive demand, then maybe those scarcity type of time periods aren't quite as big of a worry, or maybe the solar ramp type time periods aren't quite as big of a worry. If you have demand that's willing to say, all right, well, prices are rising right now, you know, we kind of have this threshold where at a certain point we're probably just going to curtail and just kind of ride this out for, especially if it is like that shorter duration scarcity period where it's largely just driven by the solar ramp. If it's only going to last a half an hour or an hour, some of that demand might be a little bit more willing to just say, all right, well, let's curtail for a little bit, just kind of ride this out, and then we'll just come back up as the prices fall. So it might be a bit more manageable. I mean, eventually you might see a little bit more of a generation following electric demand system or electricity system overall or power grid, where currently we kind of have this demand following system, which it kind of has to be. I mean, if you have your generation side and your supply side is all dispatchable. It's all kind of responding to the demand that it needs to fill. And the demand side is fairly inflexible. If the demand side eventually becomes a little bit more flexible and you have the supply side that's maybe a little bit more inflexible with a lot more solar and wind generation, then it kind of may need to transition that way a little bit, or you might have a bit of an evening out there where you have a lot more of the dispatch or the responsiveness coming from both sides rather than just the supply side.
Yeah. Okay. So it sounds like you might have the tools to kind of manage it in the future.
Yeah. I mean, that's the optimistic take for sure, but I think it's feasible. It's just, you know, there's a lot that needs to happen, right? It's a big transition and it's a big build out, right? So there's a lot of moving parts.
I guess it's kind of exciting to see and exciting for how, I guess, battery storage can be a sort of big part of that transition.
Yeah.
I mean, just to kind of round things off a bit. So if we're at 4 gigawatts today, I guess it's interesting just to talk briefly about, you know, who are the companies who have been kind of driving this? You know, what type of companies are actually building battery storage? If we're looking forward to the kind of like the growth in capacity that we think will happen, you know, are the same companies the responsible there, or are we going to see a bit of a shift in the market with sort of new, bigger players coming in?
Yeah, I definitely think we'll see some new entrants to the market just by the fact that we have all this different all these different projects that are going to be coming online in the future, right? I mean, they can't all be built by the same few companies. I mean, with that being said, some of these companies that are kind of at the top of the install capacity leaderboard, for lack of a better term, in ERCOT right now have been building projects pretty rapidly. So, that includes companies like Jupiter Power, Engie, and now Green Power. Companies like that some of them are kind of more traditional utilities. Engie and Enel are, you know, they've been involved in different types of technology types, where you've got Engie on maybe the more thermal generation side, and Enel has done a lot with wind and solar generation historically. So you have those types of companies, and then you also kind of have a company like Jupiter that's maybe just focused a little bit more only on batteries at the moment. So I think we'll kind of see a mixture going forward. I mean, we'll see if some of these companies continue to get bought by larger entities as well, like Jupiter, I think it was bought by BlackRock a couple of years ago, I want to say. They're private equity owned as of now by one of the larger private equity firms in the U.S. I mean, that is possible that may continue as well. I mean, I think it is an attractive market. So I think we will see a pretty diverse group of companies looking to get involved in it, honestly. So, yeah.
With that, I mean, so to date, I guess a lot of those companies have sort of done their own kind of optimization, operate the systems in-house. I guess that quickly, yeah. Do you think that's going to remain the kind of status quo? Are we going to see sort of independent optimizers sort of rise in ERCOT?
Yeah, I mean, that'll be interesting. I know that there are some that are trying to make it happen right now. So I guess kind of to take the easy way out, I think it will be a little bit of both. I think, you know, as we move away from ancillary service dominated strategies, maybe it does get a little bit more complex in terms of trying to maximize those revenues. And if they're driven a lot more by energy, you kind of have to be a little bit more on the ball in terms of your short-term forecasting and making sure you're kind of maximizing what you're getting out of the system and kind of hedging your risks the right way as well. So in that sense, I guess I could see, you know, maybe some of those more independent or specialist optimizers or operators of batteries maybe seeing a little bit more of an uptick in terms of their usage. But yeah, I mean, we'll see. I mean, hopefully we'll kind of be able to provide some of the breakdown on who's coming out on top in that regard. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it evolves.
Cool. I mean, that kind of wraps us up. My final question. So I guess, well, as our kind of ERCOT expert, you used to work in the control room. What's your ERCOT contrarian view?
All right. Yeah, I keep having to dig these up. I think this is like my third one. So I'll keep thinking about these. But I think for this time, what I'm going to go with is the short term, the nature of scarcity events is really changing from what it would have been maybe 5 years ago, where it used to be that you'd have basically the only time that you'd have severe scarcity happening would have been when you had a significant amount of demand, basically an extreme amount of demand, nearly record setting. And you had to basically try to bring as much of your supply as you, almost all of it potentially, that you could get online to basically try to meet that demand. Otherwise, we were going to go into an emergency condition. Now, that's not necessarily the case whenever we have price spikes anymore. But at the same time, I do think those price spikes are actually kind of reflective of some amount of scarcity still. I mean, it's a very short, fleeting moment where it's kind of you're chasing these changes in the net demand or the net load. As solar is ramping offline, you're losing quite a bit of generation, and you kind of need to fill that gap with something dispatchable and something that can respond quickly to basically be able to fill the gap to when demand is going to start dropping off or when you might have more thermal generation available to be dispatched. It's kind of a thing where you're threading the needle a little bit, where that didn't necessarily used to be the case. And I guess it's almost like it'd be great if we could just have pricing redone every like 4 seconds or every minute, right? Where it's just like you almost need an increased level of granularity to really capture everything that's needed in the moment. But I mean, a lot of times, basically, it seems like scarcity going forward is going to be more on that. And I mean, you can still have extended periods of relatively high prices, but extreme high prices are probably really going to only be lasting around that long, rather than maybe a more multi-hour scarcity event that we would have had in the future. So I think it is kind of fair to say that these are scarcity events that we've been seeing in the recent history, even if it's on a day where we only have like 50 gigawatts of demand. I mean, you have a bunch of different extenuating circumstances that contribute to that, whether that's significant generation outages on a given day, or actually just kind of relatively warm weather for that period of the year. But yeah, I mean, it's just kind of it's indicative of the overall change that's happening to the system, right? I mean, I guess I've kind of seen the take thrown around that it's not necessarily true scarcity that we're seeing, because it's not a true extreme demand that needs to be met. That's actually struggling. The system doesn't have enough capacity to meet it, because technically the system does have enough capacity to meet it. It's just that threading that needle for that short period of time is the hard part. And that's where there is some amount of scarcity that does kind of show up.
And it sounds like a pretty good reason to get more batteries on the grid.
I mean, yeah, that's definitely my main takeaway, is that they really help fill that gap for sure.
Cool. Well, I think that sounds like a good way to leave it. Thanks for joining us, Brant, and I hope you enjoy the rest of your week in London.
Yeah, thanks, Wendell. Thanks for having me, guys.
All right, and thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening to Transmission, a Modo Energy podcast. Transmission delivers conversations from industry leaders and experts exploring energy markets and the operations and technologies related to grid-scale battery energy storage. Check out our other episodes by searching Transmission wherever you get your podcasts. Check out the Energy Academy, our video crash course on how markets in Great Britain and ERCOT work, or head to modoenergy.com to see our written research. Thanks for listening.